Hello, everybody. Welcome back to SFG Podcast, episode 13. I am your humble host, Lionzine 4, aka Mr. Lion, BKA. Don't know any more BKAs. I'm with my co-host, Mr. Sick, the scruffy face, Coach Sick, aka Top Striker Sick. Sick, how you do today, my friend?
What's up, man? How you doing? I'm good.
All right. That's good to know. Good to hear. You should be doing really well because Arsenal's doing very well. It's been a great last four or five games. Exactly. Sure. But today, main focus today is the big derby, Arsenal United. And we have a special guest, our third guest of the podcast, right? First was V2 of Liverpool. Second was Shane of Chelsea. And as in true SFG podcast fashion, we try to get a guest on for every big game. So for our third guest, we have a good friend of ours here locally in the area, a former Nottingham Forest youth product, also a footballer in college, in the collegiate level over in Minnesota, good friend of ours and longtime United supporter. Sorry to hear that. Unfortunately, our good friend Jermaine, how you doing today, man?
I'm good, thanks. Appreciate the intro. Thank you.
So, Mr. Jermaine, real quick, you're one of the truest Manchester United fans in the area, which is why I wanted to get you on the show. And you being that you've lived back in England, real quick, just to start off, give me your earliest or favorite Manchester United moment in your life. We'll start there.
Yeah, no, definitely. For me, growing up, the reason I'm from Nottingham, so really and truly, the team I should have supported, you know, should have been Nottingham Forest. But you know, I had friends on both sides. But it was the time when Ryan Giggs first came out. I was a left winger, so when I saw Ryan Giggs play as a young kid, I realized that's the way I wanted to kind of emulate my game.
Yeah.
So, you know, growing up watching people like Giggs, you know, Beckham and those guys coming through the academy. But for me, like, you know, my favorite time was obviously 1999, the treble year.
The big treble year.
You know, and we did the treble year. I think obviously the most historic time in our history. And, you know, if you look at that squad, it was just really homegrown talent. Mm-hmm. You know, the Paul Scholes, the Nicky Butt, the Nevilles, you know, Beckham, you know, this was before the flair, you know, this is the, for me, arguably, I know we have the Manes, the Salahs, we have the, you know, we had the Messi and Neymar, but I think Andy Cole and Dwight York has to go down for the best partnership in history of the game, or one of them, in my opinion. So, those are my favorite times.
Why is it that, I mean, real quick, just to piggyback on that, why is it that that partnership, it's almost like a underrated, like a folklore. Like you don't hear many people talk about Dwight York and Andy Cole as much as they do partnerships. You know what I mean? And I remember I was a lot younger back then, but I always remember it because I, for one, seeing two black center strikers play, you know, headline England was headline an English Premier League team such as Manchester United was unprecedented at the time. And on top of that, being an Arsenal fan, and you know, you see Ian Wright here and there, and then you know later on you saw the Thierry Henrys and Anelkas in Arsenal side, but you didn't see two black center forwards playing, you know, in a partnership and winning on top of that. So why is it that it's almost like you don't hear it talk about as much their partnership and how much they did for Manchester United?
I think it's definitely. Perhaps the errors, right? You have to understand, in 99, those days, this was before social media. Okay. You know what I mean? So everything had to be either, you know, in streaming the games, you know, worldwide, it was more difficult than now. We have Instagram. I think also, if you look at the players in those times, you know, there was less flair. There was less fame. There was less money.
Yeah.
There was less sort of fashion, you know, at that point. It was David Beckham was the only guy that's known, you know, outside of football on that level, that scale. So true. I think it's just different times and era. Now we associate fame and celebrity and followers and style and image sometimes a little bit more than the actual products on the field. So I think, so it kind of, you know, it's kind of both goes hand in hand. So that's probably why, you know, you don't hear about it as much. But if you look back in history, you know, the game, you look at what they did. You know, you have to kind of, you know, put your hands up for that and applaud it for sure.
Yeah,
it's crazy because I was actually talking to one of my good friends, and we were saying how social media is a really big thing now, and it's helping. For one, we were talking about just the Americans that were going abroad. It was helping them a lot and getting them into those European teams a lot easier nowadays than, you know, kind of back in the days, like how we're talking about now. And it's just, you know, it's like a blessing that social media is around now, because
yeah,
we get so much more opportunities.
Oh yeah, definitely. Kids are able.
It's a lot easier to kind of go over there and, yep, play in a sense.
Yep, definitely. We didn't have to imagine it like we did back in our time. Back in our time, yeah. I mean, I was blessed. Sakani was blessed as kids to go over, you know, overseas and into Europe and play, you know, play against youth academies and big teams and stuff like that, like Dortmund and PSV and Glasgow Rangers and really get to see it. But before we got there, we just imagined, you know, like we weren't sure if we were, you know, on that same level as those clubs, because it was just difficult to know, right? We couldn't communicate with them. There's no social media, so we just watch what we watched, and going over there and seeing that we were able to compete definitely put things in perspective for us on this side. But nowadays, I mean, you want to go, you know, you can go watch a whole Manchester United training session on YouTube. You know, if you're a kid, you can go watch Barca train. You can go watch Messi train. You can go see what they do privately. You can see what they do in the gym. You know, it's so much easily accessible, right? To a kid if he wants to become a professional to do these things now, because they're all over the place. It's all over social media. But I digress, though. Manchester United, the last, let's see, your form, I mean, that's, you know, outside of you guys losing to Sheffield a couple days ago, which we'll get to, you guys have been on fire. You know, it's if you asked me in September that if Manchester United would be, you know, in the title race in the end of January, February, I would have laughed. I would have laughed you out of the conversation. However, here you guys are. You guys are what? Second in up 1 point behind lead leaguers Manchester City. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that you guys have a chance this year, or do you feel maybe it's smoke and mirrors?
I was never excited, to tell you the truth. No. You know, and it's kind of similar to when I'm playing golf. I start off well, I'm playing great, and I just feel in the back of my mind something is going to happen, and that's how I felt with Man United. We're on top of the league. And the narrative back home in the papers is we're in a false position. And as negative as it sounds, I have to agree, because I just don't feel we have the consistency. Mm-hmm. You know, and every time we play a lower level team is what worries me the most. I don't have a problem that we're going to show up for Arsenal or Liverpool. Even if we lose, we're going to at least put effort in.
Yeah.
But when we show up to these lower level teams, we, back in the day, you know, all you had to do is show the Man United crest and the game was already won.
Yep.
You know, the moment you got in the changing room. So, and those days are over. Mm-hmm. And I just had a bad feeling before the Sheffield game. I said, we're in a prime position to really, you know, get some points and really create that cushion just in case we do have a bad day against a big side. Mm-hmm. You know, that if we lose, then it's not so big of a deal. And we go to Sheffield, worst team in the Premier League history in terms of games played and points, you know, ever, you know, earned. Mm-hmm. And we go and do that because we were very lethargic, defending. We changed too many of the players. Yes. And a lot of people just didn't play. We did a wholesale change, which, if you look at league position and form, you know, I think probably, you know, Solskjaer probably thought that was the right thing to do. But, you know, sometimes I think at this point, with the Man United we have, we probably just have to pretty much go with like an unchanged side, do like what Liverpool do. Or City, we don't have the depth of City, but, you know, Liverpool, if their players are fit, you know, those guys are playing.
But I guess it's a case of if you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't, right? Because if you don't rotate the side, right? Let's say you don't rotate, you lose, and then you lose a Bruno Fernandes for two months, right?
Correct.
Now everyone's on Ole Gunnar's back, right? Because it's like, why didn't you rotate? Are you kidding me? Blah, 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 blah. And then if you do rotate the side, you're on the risk of dropping a point, dropping 3 points against Sheffield United in a title race. And yes, Liverpool maybe want to be like them and go, you know, 13 men in all every game where you're only making 2-3 subs of the same players, but Liverpool's doing it out of necessity, right? They're missing tons of players in their back line and stuff like this. They really have much of a choice. Whereas correct. United has a big, I don't want to say a huge depth, but you guys have players. You guys have guys that are capable, right? I think the team that you played against Sheffield, that you put the 11 that you put on against Sheffield was more than capable of beating Sheffield. I think it's like you said, the lethargicness and the lack of composure in the back line may have hurt you. And I'm hoping more for more of that tomorrow.
To be honest, right now it's one of those games. Sometimes you can go and say, okay, all right, I feel we're going to win, but it's so unpredictable. I don't even know. I can't say we're going to win. I can't say we're going to lose. I probably have to stay on the fence and say maybe a draw, because I think one thing that I'd say Arsenal and Man United have in common is that same word, C, consistency.
Yep.
We don't know which team's going to show up. 100%. We can see Arsenal of old, Man U of old, and we can just see. But I think just with the rivalry, just with the way both teams are, I think it's going to be a good game for sure. You know, you guys are on form. You've got Lacazette scoring again. You've got Smith Rowe in the side. You've got Saka out there. Partey seems like he's fit. The problem is he came, he got injured. He looked a little bit off, and now he looks strong. He looks composed. So this is a scary time to play you guys. I'm not going to lie. Very scary.
However, these are the games we'd also drop too, right? These are the games where Arsenal's last five, I mean, we're looking at our last five games where it's win-win, draw, win-win, right? But that just means we're due for a loss. I mean, in all honesty. And with you guys, you guys normally don't drop back-to-back games. So it was almost like a gift and a curse, you guys losing to Sheffield, because you're off form, but United's not a big team, and I'm not sure if you've dropped back to back Premier League games this season. So I mean, I'm a bit worried about that, but our form, as you say, our form has been great. I mean, we've dug ourselves out of the relegation battle, that's for sure, and we definitely tried to add some goals, and with Saka playing out of his mind and Lacazette finally scoring, getting in the top 10 in goals. And that kind of goes into the next thing I was going to say, players to watch. Definitely on your end, Bruno Fernandes. I've said this on a couple episodes prior that I think that outside of Kevin De Bruyne, I think Bruno Fernandes is the best central attacking mid or central midfielder in the world today. I think consistently since he's gotten here at day one, I don't think anyone has produced more goals and assists in that midfield position other than Kevin De Bruyne. And I think right now he probably has him, because looking at the numbers, third in goals at 11, 11 goals in the Premier League this season from a central midfield position is amazing. The only central midfielder in the top five right now. And in assists, He's right there. He's right there with everyone else with seven. This guy's unstoppable when he's on form. I mean, he's a guy that you guys, I would say, has already lived up to the hype, already lived up to the transfer fee, and he's slotted into your team seamlessly. Not only that, he's taken over a role in Manchester United that I think people wanted Pogba to take, and I don't think Pogba relishes in it as consistently as Bruno does. Like when the team needs a goal, when the team needs a player to break the lines and kind of give you that extra, Pogba is capable of doing it. I just don't think that he has been as consistent as Bruno in the last year and a half.
I would agree with that assessment for sure. I think the difference between the two is obviously I think Pogba's lost his hunger. That drive, you used to see when he used to get the ball, and when he got on the ball, he was really, he runs slow, long strides, but he was galloping through that midfield, I think Bruno is definitely more hungry. He's demanding the ball in tight pockets of space, and he's very efficient with the ball.
And I think the way you guys want to play,
the issue
too,
that,
right? Bruno's plays a bit quicker because Rashford wants to play quick. Greenwood wants to play quick. Martial.
Correct.
Pogba kind of slows the game down, but then also he has such a touch of class, though, that it's almost worth it. You know what I mean? So.
I think you're right. And I think the difference is Pogba has to be surrounded with good players. He's not one to lead a team. If you look at France, he's got all the talent around him. I think even when he was at Juve. When he's around good players, he definitely, puts on a show, and he definitely, his game feeds off theirs. But there was period of time where he was the only real player, if you want to call it that, that Man United had. And I think as a result, maybe that's either got him frustrated where he's kind of lost that, you know, that spark. But, you know, who knows what will happen, to be honest with you.
I think that's a good assessment to say that he's had guys around him. Because in France, he's had Kante, he had Matuidi, he had hardworking guys around him, which required him to really just kind of get on the ball and kind of just and do things, right? And even at Juve, he had Arturo Vidal in his prime around him, Marchisio, he had Pirlo. You know, Pirlo's not really much of a runner, but he had two guys in Vidal and Marchisio that worked hard. Those were guys that ran everywhere. And Pogba covered a lot of ground, but he also didn't have to do as much as maybe he was asked for at United until Bruno came. So, and I think Bruno has helped him a lot, right? Because Pogba is starting to score goals now. He's starting to kind of get back to that form he's had before, mainly because Bruno's there, and it's so hard to game plan two central attacking midfielders or two central midfielders that do different things but are both equally dangerous. You know what I mean? And I think that's going to be a big matchup for us when we talk about our key players. As you said, Partey, I'm pretty sure Partey and Xhaka is probably going to start on Saturday, and it's be interesting to see that midfield against Bruno and Pogba. So as we get into that, I really want to hear what you think. Give me your probable lineup for United. I guess it'll depend on injuries and stuff, but your 11 that you would want to see against us on Saturday.
Let's see. So obviously we've got De Gea in goal, which I felt his performance against Sheffield was poor. Especially the first goal right there, you know, you can use your hands.
Interesting, man, because he's on his day, he can rescue you guys points, but then if he's off of it, it's at the point now where you know, you talked about Pogba, right, not really having the hunger anymore. Do you notice that from De Gea a bit? That's like maybe he's mentally checked out, and Henderson's on his heels now, and it's you think he's not really there anymore?
I guess I'm old school in my the way my thought process is. If a player shows signs or some type of admiration to leave, you need to work on his replacement. Because he wanted to leave, and we spent a year trying to court him, put him on, I think it's like 350, something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And what happens is
that was making like three.
Correct. So When a player's heart is not there, it's different. That's why when you play against the Burnleys and clubs like that, they have heart. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, that can overshadow your talent. So I feel, you know, he's at Man United because he's collecting a good paycheck and he's been there for so long. But I think his real dream was perhaps to go in Spain and play. So that's just my honest opinion. He's been very inconsistent this year. Henderson's there, so we have to look at that and figure out what we want to do long term. But with that being said, you know, he's still our number one. Henderson's there, but I wouldn't, in a game of this magnitude, I wouldn't, you know, drop him. I'd go with obviously De Gea in goal. Yeah, you know, Wan-Bissaka, right back.
Great right back, by the way. Probably one of your best signings too, as well. I mean, I think
I like him. I do think he has the develop his game in the final third, technically. Yeah,
definitely.
If he can work on some crossing. I just feel like sometimes he gets there and he doesn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So he needs to just figure out his crossing is very poor. Whereas that's where Trent and perhaps Reece James and those guys can do a little bit better. I don't like the fact that every tackle has to be a slide. He does not tackle standing up.
He leaves his ground.
He's the best slide tackler in the Premier League.
Yeah, I was going to say, his success rate is pretty high.
Players you come against, they will know how to manipulate that ball to draw you into a foul. So that always, you know, going to a ground should always be your last option, not your first. And I think that's always his first. That's my only criticism of him, but he's great. And he can shut players down. I'm not too sure that with the partnership. Obviously, we'll have Maguire as the skipper, but right now I'll probably go with Baye. Lindelof is very tidy, and perhaps, you know, he goes under the radar, does a tidy shift. Mm-hmm. But Baye sometimes is a red card waiting to happen.
Yes,
he goes into some.
I rate Baye a lot, because I think him and Maguire eventually will be a better partnership than Maguire and Lindelof. It's just that he's never healthy. He's not on the field enough.
Yes, correct.
Terrible.
Yeah, it depends. On his day, you can do it, but I've seen some goals go in where he's too tame
asleep.
For me.
He's asleep.
He's very asleep. Yeah. And Maguire can be asleep, so you can't have two guys who are sleeping. So I would go for this game. I would go with Bailly personally.
And on the left,
I'll be honest with you, the guy for me right now is Luke Shaw. When Telles came in, I said, okay, Luke Shaw's game's done, but Luke Shaw proved me wrong. I think it was again. Is it Liverpool?
Yeah, I think
so. With his experience in the Premier League, yeah, Luke Shaw would be my left back.
Scani's a big Luke Shaw guy.
I was never a fan of him. I think he's too top heavy. I saw him live in Hard Rock Stadium against Real Madrid, and he was on tour. Mm-hmm. And just looking at his physique, I said, for a professional, he should be a little bit leaner.
He ballooned when he came to United, though, because he was like that at Southampton.
I think he gained that a little bit when he got hurt, and I think he put on a little bit of weight when he got hurt, and I think I do agree. I do think he needs to kind of trim down a little bit because I feel like he's a little bit too top heavy, like you said. Mm-hmm. But before he got hurt, man, I was saying that he was on the run to be one of the better, if not best, left backs that year. Before he broke his foot the first time, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken. It might have been like his first, maybe his second year at United. He was flying, and then he got hurt, and then after that he just picked up another injury, and I was just like, damn, it was tough. But it's good that he's finally, you know, finding his feet again and starting to play a little bit better, because I've always thought he was a lot better than people gave him credit for.
Yeah, it
was a lot of hype around him, you know, growing up. I remember Luke Shaw when he's at Southampton, you know, there was a lot of hype, big wages. So, I think like anything, man, if you get some bad breaks and you don't stay fit, each time you get injured, you come back less effective. And a lot of it's mental, you know, you don't want to do the same things. But, you know, it's just you need to be consistent. And the best players, you know, like your Messi's and those guys, very rarely heard they're out for a season. You know what I mean? A lot of it comes with luck.
Yeah.
And obviously looking after your body as well, you know?
Yep.
I like Telles. As a left back myself, I liked Luke Shaw, but I like Telles because I think the way United are heading, with Maguire being able to play with the ball at his feet, I mean, supposedly, and having a midfield that likes to have the ball at their feet with Bruno and Pogba and stuff, I think that Telles is better with the ball at his feet. Defensively, I think he hasn't gotten exactly used to the Premier League yet, which is why maybe you want to go with Luke Shaw, because Luke's kind of seasoned as a Premier League defender, and maybe the partnership with him and Maguire is a bit better. But Telles, to me, I think if you're talking about a complete fullback, which is what we're saying with Wan-Bissaka, right, not being able to go forward and backwards, going back and forth, and I think Telles is really good at getting forward. I think he's really good at linking up with Bruno Fernandes. You can kind of see their partnerships and even with Rashford and stuff. But I do think he would have to work on getting up and down. I think the pace of the Premier League too is something that he's going to have to work on eventually. But you know, a good problem to have. You have two solid left backs on their days that you just have to get it right. You just got to get
a good selection. It all depends on the game, and it all depends on the game plan.
Correct.
But yeah, you're right. Both of them, I think he's definitely a better technical footballer than Luke Shaw. Mm-hmm. But at the magnitude of this game and where we are right now, we have to go with what we know.
Yep.
And we have to probably just put Luke Shaw in there.
Yep.
So midfield. You know, the issue comes in the midfield now. I feel we have to put in McTominay.
Yeah.
Just for the defensive discipline, and he gets about a little bit more. So I think McTominay has to be in there to disrupt. Xhaka's going to be physical. Partey's going to be physical, and I think in terms of his body structure and the way he gets about, we have to put Luke Shaw in there. And then obviously Bruno is going to start. I think they'll probably play more in the 10.
Mm-hmm.
Then it gets a little bit, you know, do we start Pogba? Do we not? The times he's been on the bench, we've looked great. You know, honestly.
I can definitely see a scenario with him coming off the bench in a game like this. I could.
Yeah.
But also, it's like, if you don't start him and it goes wrong, then, you know, then you really got to ask some questions. So I don't know if it's worth, if you want to play the mind games, if Ole, you know, I'd expect that from a Mourinho. You know, I would see Mourinho doing that. I would see Mourinho not starting Pogba to put him on in the 60th minute and have him try to, you know, depending upon the score, close a game out or something like that. But then who do you start then? Mm-hmm. You start Matic there? You start Fred? Who do you, you know, if you
I would start Fred.
So you go, that's what I was going to ask. Would you start Fred instead?
Yeah.
Fred's been playing good this season.
Fred's been our most consistent player. Fred gets about the pitch a lot. And people don't give him credit. I get his first year. I get it. He looked a little bit feeble. He didn't look like he was up to the pace. But before the whole current lockdown, Fred was probably one of our best players. So for me, it has to be McTominay and Fred just because of their ability to make those recovery runs and those tackles. How many times have you seen Fred, you know, on the top of our box, you know, either intercepting a pass or making a crucial tackle to kind of break up the play? So for me, you have to start McTominay, Fred. Give Bruno the freedom to kind of be up there and play the 10. And for me, Pogba has to come off the bench. We haven't seen it consistently enough to say he would be the difference maker in this match. I get he's had brilliance recently, but we have to see it on a consistent basis. Against Sheffield, it wasn't there. And I guess, you know, the whole team wasn't there, but you're a big name player. And you, at some point, people are looking to feed off your energy, you know, in order to make an impact on the game. And he didn't give us that. So that's just my opinion. And that game was just 2 days ago. Maybe he needs a rest.
Yeah, that's also true. I was going to say rest would be a big thing. And if Fred, I like Fred's game, but I mean, Fred is a big reason why you guys lost to us early in the season. He made some big mistakes that caused, I think his mistake caused the penalty, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if it was a throw in. I forgot what it was, but he didn't have a great game when you guys played us earlier in the season. But your front three, another big question, because you got some guys that should be playing. In Martial, in Greenwood. I think Martial and Greenwood are probably the two names that most get brought up because sometimes you want to play one or the other. Sometimes you want to play both of them on either, you know, maybe you want to put Martial up top or instead of Greenwood up top, maybe put Martial in the wing. What would you say with this front three against Arsenal?
Front three for me at this present time is Rashford and Cavani and Greenwood.
Ooh,
interesting. Martial is not in form. Mm-hmm. He's just going through a tough time right now. We know what he can do, but we have to go with what we know. Cavani is going to keep that central, you know, that role right there, the typical nine.
Yeah.
And he's very good. He knows where to be and anticipate, you know, where to be for the ball to end up at his feet. So for that, I think he can nick a goal, whether it's a tap-in across a six-yard box or in the box. I just think, for his experience, I would get Cavani in there. Rashford likes to cut in from the left to shoot with his right, and then Greenwood can go either way on his foot.
Greenwood's a guy that, if you develop him correctly, could be a worldie. You know, I really like Greenwood's game. I think.
So let me ask you, Jermaine, where do you think Greenwood's best position is?
Up top, because he's always gone on record by saying Greenwood is our best natural finisher in the club, what he's shown in training. So, and I have to play him up top because he has one move, which is the step overs. But the problem is, when he does the step overs, if he goes left or right, the same power is coming off either foot. And that's dangerous. Mm-hmm. When you have a left footed player, you know, dribbling, doing step overs, he's like, okay, let me watch the left. He's going to try get on the left, but with him, it's either direction.
He needs
half a yard, and I think that's the difference. You know, a step over, get half a yard, and he's got a nice shot. So that's why I prefer him up top, probably on the right of the three, not down the middle.
I think it's even more interesting about Cavani, because I honestly wasn't really thinking about it, but Cavani, Arsenal tend to struggle against the big tall strikers, right? The Harry Kanes, mm-hmm. the Calvert-Lewins. And even Danny Ings wasn't a tall striker, but he plays a bit bigger than he is.
Correct.
We struggle with them more than we do the pacey guys. Martial historically doesn't play great against us. Rashford historically doesn't play great up top against us. You know, so I think that's why we've had such great success against United in the last 2 years, because we normally it's against those guys that are just pacey and don't really hold up play. You know what I mean? And I think Cavani, even Ollie Watkins, when we lost 3-0 to Villa, just guys like that are strong, you know, the strong center forward builds, we tend to not Giroud, right? We tend to not do great against them. Our back lines, no matter who is playing center back for us, just get pushed around. We get pushed around. Mm-hmm. So Cavani, I think, could relish in that role starting tomorrow and having Rashford and Greenwood with pace playing off of him. You know,
correct.
So
he's a good playmaker too. He's not selfish. Yes, so yes. If those guys make the runs, he's going to get the ball, and you've got Bruno doing the same. So
correct.
I think we've all been said and done. I think he should be the man to start. Center forward tomorrow and have the other two young lads on the outside. I think that's the only way we're going to be successful.
Interesting, man. Interesting starting 11. Sakani, let me ask you before I give you mine. We have a lot of fringe guys that could be, especially within our back line and going into the midfield. Who do you think should be starting tomorrow?
So my starting 11 would be Leno in goal, of course.
You don't want to start Matt Ryan, man? You just got him at Brighton.
No.
Just throw him in the fire. Why not? You know?
No. I'll save that for the next cut match.
Yeah.
But
no, definitely Leno.
I'll go Leno in goal, and then I'll go Bellerin on the right.
Bringing Bellerin
holding.
Back.
Okay. Yeah, I bring Bellerin back, even though Cedric has been playing.
I was gonna say Cedric.
He's had a few good games, but I still don't rate Cedric.
Though. Yeah, the game like this, you got a derby match. You gotta bring
the guys in. It's tough for me to bring in.
Yeah,
it's him in a game like this. But I'll bring Bellerin in, holding on the right center back. For me, this is where it gets tricky.
Yeah. Oh, so you're starting holding on the right? Okay. Yes. Yeah. So, who is playing center back to pair with?
That's the, so yeah.
We got a lot of guys in contention right now.
So, ideally, it'll be Luiz. But for me, I feel like
you want to bring Gabriel back.
I want to bring.
He hasn't
Gabriel
played
back
in three games, and it's
No, he didn't play that well last game either. But yes. I think he just needed to get that out. And
did he play against Southampton?
Yeah, he played in the cup match.
Oh, the one we lost. Yeah.
He didn't play though. He didn't play that well that game. But I think he, kind of needed to just get the rust off. So I'd bring him back in, left center back. I just feel like
he did play against United the game that we beat them
the first time,
right?
Yeah.
The first time around.
I just feel like he'll do a little bit better, kind of with the pace and the strength of Cavani and. Greenwood on the other side. If that's the pair on if they set up that way, and then I will go Tierney on the left, and then the center mid pairing. You said it already. I think it's going to be Partey and Xhaka. Emile Smith Rowe in front of them, and then on the right side, I'm going to go Saka. Down the middle, Lacazette on the left. If he is, back and he's ready to go, Aubameyang. It's tough to leave him out. Even though I know he's had some family issues, but if he's ready, I bring him back in because he's had a few training sessions.
Yeah.
Hopefully he can
get
going again. But if all is well, then that's my starting lineup. If he can't go, then I'm going to bring Pepe in on the left.
Yeah. And so, I think that's also a big question, too, is if he can go or not, right? Because, that's heavily dependent upon that, for sure.
But yeah, so, if he can go, it's Aubameyang on the left. If not, I bring Pepe in, and then I'll see if I can bring Aubameyang in, maybe second half when the game is going.
I think I see your logic in starting Gabriel because, I don't. So if we're planning on kind of giving United the ball and really just kind of defending more deep, like I guess not as deep, but on their heels, I think Gabriel and holding will work. But in terms of what David Luiz brings to the team, in terms of possession and starting attacks and holding the ball, obviously he's a much better passer than both Holding and Gabriel, and he is very important to that. However, you know, with Cavani up top, and Luis is not exactly a spring chicken when it comes to, you know, defending and running down defenders, and especially with Rashford cutting inside. The last thing I want to see is Rashford squaring up one-on-one versus David Luis or Rob Holding at that. So Gabriel's probably our best 1v1 defender in the back line, I think. So it's hard to take him.
I might have to give that to Holding, man, but I'm going to let you finish.
Yeah, I mean, Holding's done great against Liverpool and a lot of the big competition, actually. So I really should be giving Holding a little bit more credit. However, Holding also has a mistake in his bag as well.
I think they all do, right?
David Luiz does. Gabriel has in the past. But I think I am more confident with Gabriel because I think his lateral movement, I think he turns better than Rob does. Rob is a smarter defender because he's more seasoned in the Premier League, right? So he's able to play against guys like Mane and Timo Werner. And Holding has a great record against the top six in terms of goals scored on him. A really good record, funny enough. Mm-hmm. But I think that's mainly because mentally he's a good defender. I think tactically he's one of our best defenders. But in terms of physical 1v1 and just defending, tackling, and not losing battles, I think Gabriel is one of our best. I rarely see him get beat off the dribble. I rarely see him get someone going at him and getting beat. I've seen it happen a couple times with Rob Holding this year, especially against when we took three from Villa. He's had a nightmare against Grealish and Ross Barkley and them, you know. So you can see when teams with a bit of pace get to Rob, sometimes it's hard for him to turn and be able to adapt. I think Gabriel's really good at that. So I can see why you'd pick Gabriel. I could also see why David Luiz would get picked too as well, considering he's been playing good the last couple games and he's vital to helping us start our attack. So question, Jermaine, what do you think about Gabriel, the new center back? I know a lot of other teams have been hit or miss on him, but what do you think about us signing him as a kind of a marquee left center back for us in the future? He's a young guy.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough of him, if I'm honest. But just the snipe, you know, snippets. It looks like a decent player. Looks very, very strong. Looks very, you know, very sort of competitive as well. I think sometimes some players don't have that edge, you know, about them. Yeah. But he looks like a good prospect. I mean, obviously, I think perhaps next year is where we're really going to see him once he's settled in.
Yeah,
and kind of adapts to the Premier League. But going back to your point, you know, Rob Holding may not be the best athlete, but he does read the game very well. Kind of reminds me of maybe like a Johnny Evans, you know, mm-hmm. those guys that just kind of go under the radar, but they do keep things tidy and they do the industrial work, you know, the stuff that's not very, not the pretty stuff. But he'll put his head where he will get hurt, and that's what he will do for the side. And sometimes those are the players that you need.
Exactly. And maybe Bolton. You know,
he came from Bolton. He's come up the ranks. Yeah, yep. He's really worked.
And
yeah,
I think he'll have a long career. I think he's only 25. I think he's still relatively young.
He's very young.
You know,
he got injured when he first signed, right?
Yeah, he actually got hurt. Was it last year? Sick? It was last season that he had the ACL, or no? He came back after last season.
Actually, against United.
Yeah, it was against United. Yeah, when Emery during Emery days.
He didn't feature too much under Emery. I think that's where the injury came into play.
No, you know what's funny? During the 18, remember that unbeaten 8-22 game streak we had? He was the feature center back during those times. Yeah. It was him and Mustafi. Funny enough, and he was out. He was playing out of his skin. We were barely conceding goals, and then he got hurt against you guys, and. Mm-hmm. You know, as a 6'2" center back with the AC with a cruciate injury, it's hard to come back.
That's tough, yeah.
That's something that takes plenty of time. And he came back and was really kind of thrown into the fire at first, and it was difficult because the form wasn't all there yet. And towards the end of the season, when we won FA Cup, I mean, you know, big clean sheets against big teams, and you know, City and Chelsea, Liverpool. He was there playing all those games, and was a big reason why we won those games against big teams. So he's definitely earned his spot. I personally think his role in the team will be that backup right center back. I think we're going to go out and find a big time center back. Hopefully, you know, I mean, you want a Virgil character, you know, something like that.
Everybody
wants that. Right? But, you know, I think Gabriel will be that left center back role. And I think we're going to go out and try to find a big name right center back and have Holding hopefully be that backup in Pablo Mari and hopefully Saliba, if we ever know what's going on with Saliba, hopefully be that fourth center back. So I think if you notice with the team, that's why I've got rid of Socrates. You know, we're getting, you know, I think Mustafi should be out of the door sooner or later. We're trying to clear house in that back line. We have a lot of center backs. So getting rid of some of those guys and kind of keeping the guys we want is a main priority for us.
Yeah, and I think Arteta definitely likes holding. I think he just signed a contract extension not too long ago. So he obviously sees him in his plans, right? Yep.
Which leaves out Chambers. You know, I think Chambers will probably be gone this summer.
Chambers. It's kind of tough. Yeah, I think it's tough. He's a decent backup. He's adequate. But I think he's been out. You know, it's changed now. I think Arsenal was trying to obviously look a bit more upstream and get some more quality. And so I think he could be suited at like a West Ham, or you know, Chambers could go somewhere else and maybe a Brighton and play some minutes.
I could see him there.
The player I want to see and the defender I'll be analyzing, if he does start, would be Luiz, because similar to Bailly, I just think Luiz has a rash moment in him at some point, whether it's a tackle he doesn't need to make, it's a penalty or something. So if he does start, it'd be interesting to see really how he plays throughout the whole game. But like you said, going forward, he's very tidy with the ball at his feet and he can spray the ball like no other, you know what I mean, to start the attack. So I'd definitely be interested to see how he plays.
You game plan for that. If Luis is there,
you attack him.
I think if you're Rashford, you tell Rashford if he's on the right, you know, go at him. Or if Greenwood's on the right, you know, cut inside and go at him. I would definitely game plan for that, you know, because you want to be going at David Luiz. You know that he's rash. You know that without the ball, he doesn't get around as fast because he's just not old enough anymore. I mean, he's just too old at this point to do so, to get around, you know, consistently. But with the ball at his feet, you know, he's quality. He is able to start attacks. He's able to, you know, create chances and things like that, which is why, you know, he has been playing. But I agree with Sakani. I think you protect your back line and you put Gabriel in instead. So, but anyways, real quick, before we end up, score predictions. Jermaine, give me your score prediction.
Like I told you at the beginning of the show, I'm on the fence. Just if we would have beaten Sheffield, I said okay, I'd say let's get a 1 or 2-0 win. But I'm going 1-1 draw. Okay. I know it seems, you know, a little bit pessimistic. The issue is I just don't know which Manchester United are going to show up. If I knew which side was going to show up, I could say, yes, we're going to win. But we're not consistent.
I don't see it as pessimistic. I mean, a point away from home against the Arsenal team that's been on lightning form, I think is a good prediction. It's a good shout. But 1-1, give me your goal scores then. Give me your goal scores.
1-1, Bruno penalty. That's what will happen. David Luiz will do something. I think Bruno penalty.
Okay.
Maybe Rashford will get taken down or Greenwood, but yeah. I feel it's a penalty.
Okay, Sakani, what you got? Game prediction.
All right,
and goal scorers.
That's tough. I'm gonna go 2-0 Arsenal.
Ooh, 2-0 to the Arsenal. Okay.
I'm gonna hold the faith because we have the second best defense only behind Man City right now.
Yeah, in terms of goals.
With goals allowed. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna hold the faith and you know keep it up. So I'm gonna go Lacazette with a goal and I'm gonna go Saka with a goal.
Ooh. Okay. I like that prediction a lot. I'm going to go 2-1. The reason why I'm going to go 2-1 is because I think, as Jermaine said, it depends on who starts. If it's Luiz, that's a penalty waiting to happen. Bruno, I think Rashford maybe gets in one time. And also that, as of late, normally we're really good against the set piece. We're actually one of the best defensively set piece teams in the Premier League. We don't get scored off of set pieces, but lately we've just been terrible against set pieces. I mean, Southampton scored a set piece against last week, and I think the week before that somebody hit the post. And you guys, United, have been pretty decent on the set piece. Maguire has gotten to the end of a few set pieces lately.
He scored last week on the one.
Yeah, he scored last week, exactly.
The game you guys just lost.
Bruno has great delivery to free kicks. Now, Leno is one of the best keepers against free kicks as well. He rarely gets scored on free kicks, but you guys seem to just get calls around the box a lot. It just seems to happen. So I think that you'll get one, but I don't think your back line is stopping us from scoring goals. So I think 2-1. I think Aubameyang, if he starts, he comes back and scores. And I think I'm going to give Saka the winner as well. He's been on lightning form. So that's my prediction, man. So that's all we got today. Yeah. I appreciate Jermaine coming by, stopping by the SFG, really giving us a quick talk. I do hope that you guys do not win the league this year. But, I mean, if it comes between you and Tottenham, I'm going to go with United for sure.
You mean Liverpool?
Or you and Liverpool, I'd probably go...
Tottenham ain't winning shit.
I mean, I'm hoping not. I mean, they you know, they crapped the bed yesterday against Liverpool. But if it's up to me, I would want neither of those teams to win. I just hope that you know, Arsenal can finish in the top five. You know, we're only 4 points behind fourth place, so we'll see. With it's a big game for both of our teams, really. If United wants to be considered in the title race for sure, and it's not the fake title race, they have to get at least a point tomorrow for sure.
I think it's a slightly bigger game for Man United.
Yeah.
It's just because of where we were and the fact that we dropped points. So if we beat Sheffield, it's an equally as important game because we had some cushion. But it's a bigger game for United. We have to make things happen.
Yes.
Whereas if Arsenal draw, or maybe if we lost, no one's really going to attack Arteta and say, whatever. True. You know, but with Man U, it's going to be
it's a little bit more
pressure.
Very, very much so. Very much so.
So and it's still tight. I mean, you go on a 3-4 game winning streak, and you see like the points between top and maybe six is not that great.
Very,
you know what I mean?
Very small.
Which is going to keep things interesting for the end of the year. Waiting to see who's. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but for me right now, my prediction is Man City. I think they've got the depth. They've got, you know,
yes.
They've just got, there's a well-oiled machine. You know, you've got people like Cancelo, and you've got Gundogan playing like early Yaya Toure.
On his mind.
So,
Foden, too. You got Foden there scoring goals.
You got Foden, you got Mahrez. So, yeah. And that's the difference with a lot of other teams, and especially Man U. It's very well that Bruno's playing well, but that creates a concentration.
Yeah, of one
and
player.
Everybody watches film. Everybody has tactics. So once you develop a defensive plan against Bruno, where are your goals going to come from?
It's an interesting point you made, too, about that, too, because going into the business end of the season, City has two teams, you know, Mahrez.
Correct,
is still
two full teams.
They got, you know, they have guys in every position to slot in. And when you look at United and Liverpool right now, still in Champions League, it's difficult because Liverpool's, you know, the reports come out today that they're still looking for a center back, right? Before the window closes, because
my team just got hurt,
right? So how does that?
Bad one.
You know, I can't say I feel bad for them. But exactly. Sorry to hear about the injury.
Tottenham too as well. Yeah. Everyone's still playing European football. So when you get into this business end of this season now, you have to, and you have guys like Tottenham now. You have Harry Kane out, and you have all these other teams struggling. City just looks like a well-oiled machine because they have so much depth, and I think that the depth in the business end of the season, depth matters more than anything. You know,
I think City need a forward though. City need a forward. I think they're gonna. It's time for them to.
I think
it looks like they want to move on. Yeah, they're moving on from Aguero, and Jay Juice doesn't do it. He doesn't do it for me. I mean, he gets his goals,
he's still
but I just
young,
feel
though.
Like
still young too as well. I think he's what 25, 24.
He's been in the Premier League long enough, though.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
He's
been in the Premier League.
Yeah.
He should be seasoned, but the good thing is they're getting their goals from Sterling and out wide. That's
I'm hearing about Haaland, bro. If Haaland goes there, imagine. Oh my gosh.
I don't think he's ready for that yet.
Yeah.
I think he needs one more season. I think he's come up. What's happened? He's come up has been so fast,
so quick.
Some point, you've got to. You know, you can go to a big club too early, and it could really the expectation. It could really stifle his career. So I think that's one. He's probably ready in another season or two. He's still young,
but him being there in that system with Pep and him just gobbling up goals is something that is scary. Yeah, very scary.
Yeah,
because he's a goal hungry guy, and his size. I think that's the main thing. Physically, he has to just be ready for the Premier League. It's a lot different than Germany, right?
And of course,
the pace is a lot quicker. So maybe you beef him up a bit. You get him some weight to where he can handle the beating. And I think if he does acclimate himself on a City team with Sterling around him, Kevin De Bruyne around him, I mean Foden around him, it's gonna be dangerous. But But Jermaine, thanks a lot, man, for being on the show. I think we're right at the mark now. I will wish you guys good luck, but I'm just wishing good health. Hopefully no injuries, you know. I'm not going to say good luck. I'm going to say I hope nobody, you know, gets injured on your side and our side. I hope for a good game. I do hope for an entertaining game from the neutral standpoint. I think
Correct. You
guys, even if it's a 1-1 or 1-0, it's normally a very competitive game in the derby against us. Over the years, it has been, and definitely think it's one of my favorite derbies to watch is Arsenal United over the years, you know. So
definitely. I appreciate the invite, guys. Good luck. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it, man. Right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. All right, man. Thank you.
Again, always a pleasure, my friend. You guys that have been listening up to this point, appreciate it. Obviously, like, comment, subscribe, SFG Podcast on Instagram, on Twitter, Facebook, Anchor, Spotify, all that good stuff. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We're gonna have a podcast before deadline day or on deadline day. Definitely to cement the transfer window. Obviously, going to talk about Martin Odegaard. We're going to talk about Ozil leaving. We're going to talk about a bunch of other players leaving, Socrates and those guys. So definitely look out for that, as well as a post game for Manchester United. So thank you guys for stopping by and listening to SFG Podcast episode 13. And we will see you guys after we beat United and take 3 points.
Yes.
All right.
All right, guys.
Peace. All right, I'll see you, man. Peace.
All right, all the best.